This is Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Hello and welcome to episode 87 of Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Yannick, I'm the French guy from Switzerland, and joining me tonight is someone who I tried many times to trade for someone else, but is still there. It's my good friend Dave. Good evening, Dave.
Good evening, Yannick. You cannot get rid of me.
No, I wouldn't. No. Anyway.
Oh, how lovely. Yeah.
How are you, sir?
I am very well, as it happens. Thank you very much indeed. It's, I'm not going to go into work things. It's been a very, very busy week at work so far. But, I'm finding myself. The family's healthy. It's all good. The weather's not too bad. Yeah, that's it. That's all I've got.
Excellent.
How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. Everything is also going great. Summer vacations are coming very soon, so that's the spirit of the summer.
Indeed it is.
Yes. On tonight's episode, we're going to review Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 1, Episode 15, Progress. And I think we're going to have stuff to say about this episode before we close this week's review. So, unless you have anything else to add for this introduction, Dave?
Punch it.
Let's move on to our review of this episode, Progress. So, in the teaser, Quark berates Broik for ordering 5,000 replicas of Cardassian Yamok sauce, which, with the Cardassians of the station, is worse than worthless. Jack and Nog are playing cards at a table nearby, and Nog overhears the whole exchange, ignoring the game, much to Jack's frustration. As Quark leaves the room, Nog begins to form a scheme to make a few bars of latinum off his uncle's misfortune, telling Jack his ears are tingling. Ta-da!
Yes.
Yes. And at this point, I was thinking, those two, they're up to no good.
Well, in Jake's defense, he was more concentrating on the game than he was any possible business venture.
Yes.
Noggy, in this case, is being an incredibly bad influence on him.
Yes, although there's a ton of events during this episode. I'm not going to spoil it right now, but we may come back to that later on.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, with the help of the Federation, Bajor is about to commence its first large-scale energy transfer, the tapping of the molten core of its fifth moon, Gerardo.
So fracking, basically.
Yes. But I don't know, but tapping that much energy from the molten core of a moon is probably going to make a lot of damage to said moon, which then, I don't know, it's not going to stay on its orbit or something. And it's incredible how they can even think about that. That's the open door to a catastrophe or something.
Well, it is, because, I mean, the moon itself is habitable. We know this.
Yeah.
But if we try to do anything like that with the moon here on Earth, and I'm going to ignore the fact they actually did that on Doctor Who, and there was no implication of it, that it would have disastrous effects on Bajor.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
Because of gravity and tides and such like. So why would you even mess around with, yes, with that? A bit like fracking, really.
Yeah. Also, but we would need some expert confirmation, but if a celestial body is habitable, does it deserve the name moon? Is it a moon or is it a planet? Or is it only the size of the celestial body that decides if it's a planet or if it's not? Like Pluto, which was demoted.
Well, I think you've kind of hit it on the head. I don't know whether this is an official definition. If only we knew an astronomer. I think planets orbit a star and moons orbit a planet. I think that's how it works.
Okay.
So it can't be classified as a planet or a dwarf planet or, well, a rock maybe. But I think it's because it orbits a planet that it is then considered a moon.
I think it's time for the live text to our astronomer, our uncle astronomer.
Well, as you're reading a review, I shall do the deed.
Well, yes, we do have our own uncle 24/7 astronomer. Well, 24/7, I don't know. The crew in Ops is monitoring the moon's activity, while Minister Toran observes nervously. Major Kira assures him everyone is ready and leaves for a final inspection of the moon with Lieutenant Dax in the USS Ganges.
Now, I think my quote of the week is in this scene. O'Brien uttered the phrase, "Differential subspace movement is at 0.3%. Technobabble."
Yeah. Yeah. I thought you were
really,
you were going to go with the next couple of sentences as your quote of the week, which is one of my two quotes of the week. When Minister Toran says, you know, he's scared and says, "Why is that red light blinking?" And I think O'Brien had no idea. And then he said, "Oh, we're just in normal standby mode." And so that explains everything.
It wasn't just a red light. There was a buzz that accompanied it.
Yeah. That's normal standby mode. So I wonder how it is when they're in alarm mode or something.
Yes.
That was funny. While Dax mentions that Morn had asked her out earlier, their scan reveals that there is a humanoid life sign still on the planet, in spite of the fact that all the moon's inhabitants were ordered to evacuate. Kira beams down to the surface to find out what is going on and who is still on the moon. She's surprised to find herself threatened by a Bajoran man and woman holding farm implements.
Ah.
Interesting.
Very, very. One of them was holding like a thresher. I think he was holding a thresher and she was holding like a some kind. I don't know if it was a gun or something. I don't know what it was. But it looked as though she was actually looking past Kira. Mm. I don't know if it was just because of how the stage was set. It looked really odd the way she was like advancing.
Yeah, I didn't notice that. So maybe they were added after the fact, maybe? Is that what you're saying?
I hadn't considered that, to be fair. I don't know, it just looked odd.
Yeah, okay. That happens. Yeah. The previous scene made me smile when Dax talked about Morn asking her out. And her finding him kind of cute.
Right, because she made a particular point of mentioning his wiry hairs on his forehead. And yeah. I wonder if, because she kept on about it during the runabout trip, whether she'd been, like, enchanted by him or something. That didn't seem to be her normal behaviour.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, Morn, the character that never speaks on screen.
Yes, talking to everybody all the time.
Yes.
And we never hear it.
Apparently you can make him stop talking.
I have had a response from our live online astronomy expert.
Yes.
So, planets orbit stars, moons orbit planets. That is correct.
Okay.
Not everything that orbits a star is a planet.
Pluto.
Right. Not everything that orbits a planet is a moon.
Okay.
So, fair enough. However, to the actual question, does the inhabitation, is that the word?
Yes, it is now.
If a moon is inhabited, does it affect it being called a moon? The answer is no.
Okay. Then it could be a moon.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, that's very useful to have an astronomer in our relations on speed dial.
Literally, yes.
Well, so, thank you,
Andrew. Yep. Live shout out.
All right. We are on Act 1 of this episode. An older Bajoran man comes out from the structure to talk to Kira, but tries to close the door on her when she approaches. She holds the door, determined to keep his attention. Assuming they were missed by the evacuation efforts, she tries to tell him he has to leave, but he ignores it, instead inviting her to dinner to stall her.
Well, why not?
Why not? Yes, yes. But I'm not sure she was expecting to wait 3 hours for the dinner to be ready.
For the roots to soften, yes.
That must be like very strong roots if you need 3 hours to soften them.
Well, he demonstrated it by like banging it on the table.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's a block of wood. That's not going to soften.
No, yeah. That's not going to do it. No. I don't know if they invented those roots or if they used something, but I didn't recognize it.
Oh, what? In reality?
Yeah.
I have no idea. Yeah,
me neither.
It could have been some really dodgy rhubarb or something.
Something, yeah. Meanwhile, Nog and Jake set out to find a buyer for 5,000 rupees of Yamoxos, but having very little luck finding one willing to pay Latinum. They grudgingly settle for 100 gross of self-sealing stem bolts being sold by a Lysepian freighter captain because the Bajoran man who initially ordered them could not pay. And I was like, what the heck is a self-sealing stem bolt?
That's not the question. No. The question here is, in what world is one wrappage of Yamok sauce worth three self-sealing stem bolts?
Well, maybe the Yamok sauce is worth a lot.
But if that was the case, then it would have a fairly inherent value, which Quark would be interested in.
Maybe the self-sealing stem bolts are not worth anything.
That was the next conclusion I came to, that maybe these things are actually completely and totally pointless.
Yeah.
And in fact, when we see them later on, they do seem completely and totally pointless.
Yeah, I think it's part of the comedy part of this episode, those self-stealing stem bolts. Nobody knows what it is or what they are used for. And it's not a problem because we don't care.
No.
Yeah.
I'm just glad we got to see one.
Yeah. But even if we hadn't seen one, I mean, just the exchange with O'Brien in a few minutes, that's the whole point. You know, we don't know what it is, that we don't care.
It does not matter.
Nope.
It doesn't matter. I mean, some of the things that they trade, it's like they've literally thrown a dictionary up in the air and they've collected a couple of words on the way down. And that's what we're going to call it.
Yes.
But you always have that question in the back of your mind. I wonder what that would look like.
Yes. And the fact that they kept, you know, when the captain of the freighters told them that, you know, there was no better stem bolt in the whole universe, and then they keep repeating that because that's the only thing they knew about that thing.
Right. But, I mean, I know we're jumping slightly ahead here, but yes, we know they're self-sealing stem bolts, but they're actually the only bolt that we're referring to during the entire episode.
Yeah.
So why not just call them bolts?
Because they are better than bolts. They are self-sealing. Self-sealing stem bolts.
At the best in this sector, apparently.
Yeah.
That's the best quality in this sector.
That's the old joke.
Mm. Oh, dear. Wonder how many takes they did to get that.
Yeah,
right.
I don't know.
Because Nog says it like half a dozen times in the next scene.
Yeah, and we've said that like three times and we failed four times. So
precisely. How does that work?
I don't know. Back on Gerardo, the old Bajoran begins preparing for dinner, and it will obviously take several hours. Kira tells Dax she will be delayed, content not to be seen as in a hurry. Along the way, the old man does his best to aggravate Kira into leaving, but she recognizes it. The man's name is Mullibok, and he knows that the moon's core is to be tapped and that the place will be uninhabitable soon. Mullibok has decided to stay even at the cost of his life.
It's a well-used trope, this one.
Yes.
We've seen it in films and TV so many times. I don't know, it's one of those ones you never get tired of, because the methods by which the individuals concerned try and find excuses not to leave. I mean, Lake Placid is one of them. Dante's Peak is another one. We've got it here as well, where somebody will not leave because it's their home, it's their right, it's they were born there, they want to die there, etc. Mm-hmm. But the efforts they go to try and keep themselves in that same place, they're always different. So although it's a well-used trope, it never gets old.
Yes. Yes, I agree. And it was obvious from the beginning that he was going to want to stay here. He didn't look like someone who was ready to leave.
No, totally not. You can tell that this episode was 30-odd years ago, because a lot of his reactions to her and how he referred to her and how he looked at her would have been deemed inappropriate now.
Yes. Yes, I agree. When she arrives, I like the few comments, and when he said, "Oh, you're halfway pretty," and I think he calls her a girl or something at some point.
She says, "Do not call me a girl."
Okay, we're on Act 2. The review is quite short for tonight, so that's gonna make an episode that's not gonna be too long, hopefully.
Mm.
Nog and Jack are now faced with the problem of obtaining quartz yamoxos. Yes, because in fact they sold something they didn't have, so now they have to get it.
Technically, they haven't sold it yet.
No, but they have made a deal to bring the yamoxos in the cargo bay or something in exchange for the self-sealing stem bolt.
Oh yes, of course.
Yeah.
Yes, sorry. Yeah, yeah. I'm thinking of the scene in the cargo bay, but there's another scene in the cargo bay we just had. Yeah.
So they sold something they didn't have, so now they have to get it.
Ferengi, they don't care.
Yeah, sure. Fortunately, Quark is so disgusted with the whole Yamoxos fiasco that he is happy to take Nog up on his offer to dispose of it by any means necessary. The kid's plan is able to continue. Oof.
Now, so this seems completely at odds with the rules of acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's the worst thing in the world, you wouldn't give it away. You would try and find a way of profiting from it.
I agree. But then, we had to have a show, so they had to give the amoxes. Or actually, what they could have done is, they would then try to sell the self-sealing stem bolt for something and try to, go around and find something to replace the Yamoxos, or maybe buy the Yamoxos again. I don't know. Mm. Some weird things like that. But no, so what I was referring to at the beginning of the episode was that they actually got the Yamoxos for nothing. It was not theirs to begin with. And then they sold that, and then the rest of the episode.
Yeah,
that's a big win for Nog, as he was able to profit from something he didn't own in the beginning. So he made money out of thin air.
Literally, yes, yes.
But let's not get ahead of ourselves. We are spoiling this 30-year-old episode. The old farmer tries to bore Kira into submission with the telltale of how he got started farming on Gerardo, careful to emphasize his treatment by the Kardashians. Well, not only that, I mean, everything he said about, how do you say, not carving, but, digging in the earth and grinding stones with his teeth and things like that. That was so funny. Kira indulgently listens to his story, though a little disbelieving at times.
No, you think?
Yeah, you think. Later, as she begins to tell of her days in the Bajoran resistance, she realizes she's forced to admit that she survived by hanging on like fanatics, just like Millibok is doing. Millibok's mind is made up. He will not leave his home, no matter the consequence. So she kind of gave him reasons to stay. At the same time, she realizes that she did, well, he was doing what she did when she was in the resistance.
But yeah, so that was a bit of a light bulb moment for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because he realized what she was saying and the meaning of what she was saying, that he was basically hanging on like a fanatic just in order to survive. But actually, that's completely the wrong way around. You're not going to survive by hanging on.
But my question is, did he just realize that, or did he trip Kira into thinking about that and admitting that, well, you're right. I did what you're doing right now back then. I think he knew, and he got her there because she needed to realize that.
I know the storyteller was last week's episode, but he was very talented.
Oh, yeah.
Very manipulative, very, very good at trying to affect how people think by the things that he says. Mm-hmm. I would probably suggest that almost everything that came out of his mouth was a lie or a fabrication of some kind.
Maybe a lie. I don't know if it's, but yeah, manipulation. Surely, sure.
Mm.
Presenting things in a way that would make the other person think what he wanted them to think.
Which is a skill.
Yes. But, you know, apart from the obvious lies of his story of how he tamed the land, I don't know if the rest was a lie. But this story, yes.
Okay.
It was a lie from beginning to end.
But he's also very entertaining because Baltrim and Keena, who are the two that were staying with him at his farm helpers, were absolutely wetting themselves at the stories that he was telling. And I think that's because they knew they knew what he was doing, what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
By embellishing the stories the way he was.
They may even have heard that story many times before.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
Or different versions of it.
Yeah, I can picture this guy in my head telling this story many, many years on, and every time adding another thing on top of that just to spice the story a little.
Working his audience.
Yeah, sure. So, let's move on to Act 3 already. In a Kagobe, Jack and Nog inspect their new acquisition, a 100 gross of top-quality self-sealing stem bolts. Just then, Chief O'Brien enters the cargo bay to tell them to warn Quark about bypassing the station's proper import procedures. Now, that brings a question. How did the kids bypass those import procedures? Because I can believe that Quark has, you know, the chips for the computer system and things like that to bypass all the procedures and the customs and the questions and everything, but they are just two kids. So how did they do that?
I presume that the items were beamed on board, or the seller's ship docked with DS9 and they just wheeled them out.
Yeah.
O'Brien knew that the consignment was there.
Yeah.
It was on his pad.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. Don't know. It's not very important, but I found it weird that they were able to bypass those procedures. Because, as you said, it's on the pad, so it's been in the system. So how and why did it bypass the proper import procedure? I don't know.
But he was accusing Quark of doing it, not of the kids.
Because the kids told him it was Quark's. Because Nog said it was for Quark. But I don't think O'Brien bought it. I think he knew they were up to something.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't pick up that he thought they would have been capable of it.
Well, maybe just wanted to know what they were going to do. Well, I was half expecting Odo to be somewhere, like this guy that's one of the Stembolds.
He wasn't in this episode, was he?
Nope. Hmm. No, he was not. O'Brien begins to ask a lot of questions about why Quark needs so many self-sealing stem bolts, but fortunately, he doesn't dig too deep. It does, however, seem that O'Brien, along with Jack and Nog, has absolutely no idea whatsoever as to what self-sealing stem bolts are, what they are for, what they do, or why anyone would want them.
Welcome to our world.
Yeah. Welcome. We have no idea what does it. That is not important. However, the original Bajoran who wanted them must know what they are used for. So Jack and Nog set out to find this person and possibly sell them back to the individual. Jack scans the container and discovers the man's name is Circo Chano. Now, why would you buy something to a person to sell that thing back to the original seller knowing that this person was not able to pay for that cargo? There's something weird here. Unless you want to sell that for a price. I don't know. I didn't understand the logic of that.
That whole concept just completely passed me by. But you're absolutely right. Yeah. If someone had attempted to sell something but then wasn't able to because the buyer didn't have the money for it, then surely the seller would take it back.
Yeah.
Not have someone else come along, appropriate it, and then try and sell it back to you. That's just...
weird.
Yeah. Very.
Unless, of course, because the kids just were just looking for a few bars of latinum and not the right price, you know, the full price of the thing. So so far they haven't made or lost any money. They're just traded stuff. So yeah, maybe they just, you know, oh, we've got that. We can sell it back to you, you know, 1/10 of its price because that's still money we're making. I don't know. But it still seemed weird.
We don't know who or what species this Circo Chano is. On the very unlikely but slim possibility he's actually Ferengi himself, then he will recognise the fact that because he is not in possession of those articles, then they're not his.
No, but we know he's Bajoran because the captain of the freighter said he was a Bajoran buyer. Which is,
but we're talking about the seller, not the buyer.
The buyer was Bajoran, the one we never saw.
Yes, but that's the one...
the one they contacted after... he's the guy who wanted
right,
to buy the bolts.
I'm confused... the review has confused me because it says here, Jake and Nog set out to find the person and then possibly sell them back to the individual. Well, you're not selling them back to the individual because the individual never had them. So yes. I assumed that was referring to the original seller, not the original buyer. Right. My mistake.
Yes. Kira returns to the station and tries to convince Toran to give her time to persuade Mullibok and his friends that they have to leave. But Toran refuses. If Mullibok doesn't leave the moon, the project will go ahead anyway. Furthermore, Toran refuses Kira's suggestion of phased energy retrieval, which will allow the people to stay on the planet, which is a moon, but with a much longer time frame to obtain the energy. Kira is forced to return to the moon to remove Mullibok against his will, by force if necessary. The situation erupts into violence when Mullibok's friends attack the member of Kira's team. Enraged that his friends are being removed by force, Mullibok attacks one of the security officers and is accidentally shot.
Accidental on my bottom. That was... it was... I've highlighted this kind of thing before, where they are delaying for timing reasons as part of the production. But what I saw was this person... in fact, Mullibok was holding the weapon.
No, he was strangling.
And when it was... you almost like saw the weapon being aimed, and then it was fired.
Yes. It was not accidental at all, because when... what's the name of the two people who were with Mullibok on the planet?
but they were Kina and Baltrim.
Yeah, I think Kina was trying to prevent the shooting, but the guard, it was fighting and it was aiming at Millibok. And so, yeah, not accidental at all.
No, I don't think so.
No. Kira rushes to Millibok's side and yells at one of the officers to contact Dr. Bashir to come to Gerardo and provide medical assistance.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that moon is not too far from the station, because going there and back just to get the doctor, I mean, Millibok has time to succumb from his wounds.
So what happened to the time when an away team would actually consist of a scientist, a doctor, and someone in command?
Security.
Yeah, or security, yeah.
Gone with the end of Next Gen.
Yeah, I blame Brexit.
Bejoxit?
No. So, actually, you could probably blame Brexit for this one, actually. Kira told her team that Baltrim and Keena's cottage was about 35 to 40 metres over in that direction.
Uh-huh.
And yet, the trade that Nog and Jake were doing were for 100 gross self-sealing stem bolts.
Yes.
So you've got the metric system and the imperial system, both in force at the same time, on an American TV show where the metric system is denied. So why would you say 35 to 40 metres away, when, as a nation, you don't even acknowledge that the meter exists? And if you did, it would be different to the British meter. Sorry, rant over.
Can you remind our listeners what a gross is? Just in case
we had that conversation earlier on.
Yes.
I had a huge chuckle with my son earlier on, because he was reading as I was going through the review, and he said, a gross? I said, no, not gross, gross. I said, do you know what a gross is? And he says, no. I said, do you know what a dozen is? And he went, I don't know, a million, a billion? So no, he didn't. Anyway, we went through what a dozen was, which is 12, and a gross, which is a dozen, so 12 12s, 144. So, because the number 12 has a relevance, the term dozen has a relevance in old imperial measurements. I don't know. I'm probably not old enough to understand the true reasons why. Possibly the thing that baker's batches were done in 12s. That might be the reason.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
But yeah, a gross is 144. So, 100 gross is 14,400.
Cool. And as surprising as it seems, I knew that.
I have to say, I was mightily impressed.
Yeah,
me because too. You didn't say 144. You said a dozen.
Yes.
Which is so cool. Come with me to the dimmer distant past.
Right, we're on to Act 4. Back on Deep Space Nine, Jake and Nog open communications with Cirok Chano, the original buyer of the stem bolts, under the name the No-J Consortium. They offer to sell him the merchandise for 5 bars of gold-pressed latinum, but he cannot pay 4 or even 3 bars. If he had latinum, he could have bought the stem bolts outright. Yeah, right. He cannot pay even 1 bar of latinum, but offers a trade, a less than appealing offer from Jake and Nog's point of view. The offer is 7 Tessipates of land on Bajor. Nog is getting impatient. He wants latinum, and he wants it now. Jack, however, is convinced that they should take the land. With no real alternatives, they accept the land. Nog remains skeptical, but Jack is sure it will work out.
Never get them two to buy a car.
It's funny how Nog, the Ferengi, doesn't see any potential in that, and that Jake, the human, is the one who is actually almost driving the deal.
Yeah, it's weird, because the only thing Nog can think of is it's dirt, it's mud.
Yeah.
What's the value in that?
And Jake sees the potential of that.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't actually know, and I have looked, what a tessipate is and how big is mm-hmm. it is. But I do know that a tessipate or tessipate is multiple keripates. And again, we don't know how many keripates are in a tessipate.
Let's say 12. Just
let's just say 12. if it was 12, that is a very small piece of land. Because a keripate, we do know this, is enough land on which you can grow one yarg melon.
Ah, yes, okay, so let's be a little bit more than 12.
I hope so. I mean, your stretch of land in Scotland, you could grow a melon on, I'm sure.
It's 1 square foot. Foot.
Grow a melon on it.
Yeah, almost. And there's a huge possibility that there's a big tree planted on my land in Scotland.
Well, you can't cut it down because...
No, because it's a shared property.
Right.
So I probably could cut my part of the tree. Well, no, I couldn't because I actually don't really own that land. I have just given money to the National Reserve.
Yes, you've sponsored a piece of land, really.
Yes.
It's like Caroline owns a square foot of the moon.
Yeah.
That I bought for her once.
Yeah.
And we're like, do you know what? We'll go up there next year and see it. Make sure it's well looked after and clean. Maybe put a golf ball up there. Yeah, lovely. Yeah.
Well, the difference between Caroline's land and mine is that I was physically on my land 2 years ago, 3 years ago. When I'm not sure Caroline can set foot on her land.
No, that is probably true. Although you couldn't contain yourself exclusively within your piece of land.
Indeed. I was half on my land and probably half on Sunwind's land. Anyway, so now you can call me Lord Yannick.
Lord Yannick, yes. Of somewhere in Scotland.
Of Glencoe.
Glencoe.
Yes. On Gerardo, Mullibok has survived. Dr. Bashir is treating him in his house and informs him that his friend have been evacuated to Bajor. Bashir wants to take Mullibok to DS9 for observation, but the farmer is adamant. He will not leave. Bashir tells Kira that he will take Mullibok back without his consent. He is injured and needs to be cared for. Kira has another idea. She will stay with Mullibok and take care of his needs. Without another word, she resumes Mullibok's chores, building a kiln he has been working on for some time. Bashir reports back to Sisko, who, while unsure of Kira's intentions, decides to allow the situation to continue for the time being. I've got to stop there and talk about the way Sisko decided to allow Kira to stay on the planet. That was fun.
That was probably one of my highlights of the episode, just that exchange between Sisko and Bashir, where I don't understand why he did it that way. Why Sisko was unable to make that decision for himself?
Yes, me neither. But
he had to use Bashir. Yeah, it was incredibly entertaining. Very funny to do it that way,
especially the last bit.
For how long, sir?
Yes,
absolute quality.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, great scene.
It's the comic relief part of the episode. Same thing with the self-sealing stem bolt.
Right, yeah. But with Bashir.
But that's not true, sir. Make it true.
Make it true.
Sisko visits Kira on Gerardo and discusses with her about her discomfort. With the current situation. She was accustomed to being the underdog, fighting against impossible odds. Now she is on the other side, and she hates herself for it, finding it awful. Sisko reassures her that she is on the right side, that Bajor needs people like her, and leaves her to decide how to best handle the situation. Yeah, so he himself tells her that she's on the other side and basically sucks to be on this side of the table. But yeah, I think this is one of the of those character development episodes again for Kira. And she had a lot of the, of those in the first episodes of this series, and I think it makes her stronger.
Right. So this is where I'm going to pull one of my bits of trivia forward.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Piller. Why do I know that name? Who is he? Hang on a minute. He's a writer. So yes. Yeah, one of the writers of DS9 actually commented on this, and he's quoted to have said in the Unauthorized Guide to New Trek Voyages, "In the middle part of the year, we suddenly realized we'd sort of lost Kira, which is immediately taken care of with this and other episodes as the season goes on." So yeah. They've obviously recognized what you've just said, that we had some really great character development episodes early on in the season, but then we seem to have concentrated on a lot of the other characters and left her out. But this... Well... Aside from the one, was it last week? It was a storyteller. The one last week when she was with the Kai.
That's not the storyteller. Yes, is it?
Oh, I can't remember.
It was a few weeks earlier. Oh, yes, the one where the Kai stayed on the planet because she was revived by those nanobots or some things
that's
like
right,
that.
That's and right.
She yes.
So there was that. That was a really good a good development piece for her. But this has been more about her and, I suppose, her internal fight, her internal struggle of who she used to be and who she's become and whether she's making the right decision on it. But this particular scene I found really amazing from both sides, because it was great for Kira to have this sudden revelation of the choices that she's made to get to where she is now, but also from Sisko's point of view, where because earlier on in the episode, he said he didn't know how long she would remain in uniform when she was talking to Bashir. And I took that to mean that she's actually in the process of jeopardizing her career on the station. And yet, during that final part of that scene, when Sisko effectively steps down and starts to talk to her as a friend rather than as a superior officer, he gave her the choice of how she thinks that this situation should be handled.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, Sisko, you are amazing.
Is
that you have this ability that you're not just a commander of a space station, you're also an incredibly empathetic and sympathetic human being.
Yes.
That's not easy.
No. No, no, but Sisko is a really great character. The more the series goes on and the more you can see that. So, but yeah, we told you.
You did. You did.
Yes.
And actually, I started to like Bashir a bit more in this episode as well.
Aha.
Mm.
Right, we're on Act 5 now. Jack and Nog have still not managed to sell their newly acquired land. Nog is upset. He thinks the bolts were better than the land. Jack takes the opposite stance. He is certain that land is better than bolts. As they continue their tense and joyless card game, Quark and Odo... he was there at the end of the episode.
Oh yes, I remember that.
Quark and Odo enter the room, talking about a mysterious new business group, the Node J Consortium. Quark claims never to have heard of them, but Odo was contacted by someone in the Bajoran government planning to build on a strip of land owned by four different parties. Three have agreed to sell, and this fourth one cannot be contacted. Jack's and Nog's ear pricks up. The government can't build unless they agree to sell their land. Finally, the land that they worked so hard to get is worth something.
Goodness me.
Quark, intent on getting in on this wonderful opportunity for profit, barely notices as Nog approaches him. Nog proposes a deal to Quark, who, certain that his nephew is just being a bother, dismisses him out of hand, until it dawns on him that no J is indeed Nog and Jake. Ding. And they were like, yeah. Like Nog.
Yeah. Ding, ding, ding. That'd be one proud yeah. quark.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But technically, you know, this is only possible because he gave the Yamoxos to Nog. So I'm still a bit unclear on that, how that does that plays with the rule of acquisition. As you mentioned earlier, he would probably not sell the Yamoxos. I mean, if he realizes that that's because of that, that Nog got 5 bar of Latinum, he could then say, okay, then you owe me 5 bars for the Yamoxos, and we call it a you know, deal.
Yeah, but he passed that Yamoxos. He disposed of it. He effectively denied any ownership of it. Therefore, he's entitled to nothing.
True. If someone tells you, okay, get that and throw that away, and you're not throwing it away and you're selling it, is it stealing or is it upscaling?
That's a different thing. That is a different thing.
Yeah.
There are questions on that. Certainly in this country, where if you throw something away and someone then takes it out of your bin and then makes a fortune out of it, whether it is actually theft or not, because strictly speaking, this came up recently, and Popey might have been involved actually, that when you throw something away in your bin, until that bin has become emptied into the truck that collects the rubbish, it's still yours.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. But it made a great story, so. Mullibok becomes bedridden and, having had a bad dream, wakes up to Kira taking care of him. She keeps his temperature and tries to sleep. Soon, recovering enough to complete work on his kiln, he gets up while she sleeps. Kira comes out to help him finish, but then, as the old man fires it up, she goes back inside and comes out with her bags packed, along with Mullibok's. Kira says she could use a friend on Bajor, and she'd like it to be him. He tells her that as long as the cottage is standing, he will not leave. In response, she fires her weapon on the kiln, destroying it, and sets fire to his cottage. She tells him it's time to move on. Mullibok is devastated. He asks Kira to kill him as well. He is convinced he cannot leave, but there is nothing left on Gerardo for him now. He says if he leaves Gerardo, he will die. Kira responds, no, you won't. I won't let you. And signals the crew to beam them both up.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sniff.
Oh, actually, my eyes were fairly leak-free on this one, but it was a really emotive ending.
Yeah. Yeah. I was amused by the way Kira set the cottage on fire. You know, carefully lighting all think it's gas or something.
You could see the marks of where the whatever accelerant they use, probably paraffin or something.
Yeah.
You could see where it was placed.
Mm-hmm. It was not natural at all.
No, not at all. But I have to admit, I was actually looking ahead to work out where she was going to go next, because you could see there was like slightly darker patches where she was put, because she needed cues as well. She needed to know where to set fire to it. Yeah. And then the coup de grace was absolutely fantastic, where she took her torch and she went fuff, 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 and then just threw it into the room. How utterly pathetic, because it landed on the floor. There was nothing else around it, nothing for it to catch fire with. Okay, I think the floor was probably wooden, so it would have caught eventually, but there was nothing there to actually, you know, burn.
Yes. Well, I guess security on the set was probably a priority.
I would imagine so. And to be honest, whatever Kira was doing, it only had to be a symbolic gesture. It's not like she was going to throw, you know, a couple of hundred tons of dynamite in it and blow the house to smithereens. She just had to prove the fact that actually this is the state of things. Your house has to be destroyed in order for me to make you realize that you are better off not here.
Yes.
That kiln was cool, though.
Yes.
I want one of those in my garden. That was well cool.
I don't know if it's really efficient, the way he built it. You know, it just...
gaps around the sides.
Gaps around the sides, you know, gaps between the stones and stuff like that. But yeah, it was cool.
Yeah.
It was cool. It seems like those bricks were 3D printed or something, but...
they were very light.
Yeah.
Very light indeed.
Indeed.
And the kiln was a big part of Mulebok's life. He'd spent a lot of time building it, and he was anxious to get it finished. But if all he was doing was putting some cement on the back and just almost throwing the bricks onto the side of the kiln, well, that's no more than half an hour's work. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe the rest is more complex, you know, with the angles and stuff like that, and make it perfectly round. And
right.
And that's the kind of thing you do a little bit here and there, and that becomes a life project.
Yeah, yeah. I nearly had a complaint.
Oh.
Because when he was putting the hexagonal bricks onto the onto the slanted side of the kiln, one of them was actually quite badly twisted and not sat in properly.
Ow.
And then when he put the last one in to finish off that side, he put that one in place, patted it down, and then went back and corrected the one that was in the wrong place. And I'm like, oh, thank you so much. That would have bugged me.
So you and the actor have the same OCD?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we're a family of it. And we wind each other up by pointing things out like this. So I'm glad the kids didn't watch with me.
But I agree with you. It has to be correctly set. Otherwise,
totally.
You know, what's the point of having hexagons if they are not perfectly aligned? Okay, so what did you think of this episode, Dave?
I really liked it. I really did. Nice, again, to have a really good contrasting B-plot to the main story, which was Gerardo. And then the B plot, which was kind of like the comedy track, if you like, of Nog and Jake and the self-sealing stem bolts. Got to say that so slowly to get it right.
Yes. The best of the galaxy.
the best quality in that sector.
Yeah, best quality in that sector.
It was really good. Really good. Very well written. Acting was pretty decent. Bashir shocked me because I actually quite liked him in this episode. Sisko, yeah, absolutely amazing. You were right. I believe you. And yeah, I think if one of the purposes of this episode was to bring Kira back into the limelight and give her the attention that she needed in order to help us as viewers get a better handle on her character and become more attached and associated with her character, then this absolutely worked. It was a really good way of digging into her past and her history with the resistance. And I suppose in a very short space of time, in the scenes we saw with Mulebok, we've effectively taken a trip down memory lane of her journey and how she's grown up from her time in the resistance to where she is now. And that's something that even Sisko highlighted during that final scene with her. So yeah, I loved it. Really, really good episode. Not top five, but certainly top 20, which is great because we've only seen 16 so far.
I agree with that. I think it's a great episode for Kira, but also the relationship between Nog and Jake, which is the tightening. Yeah, as you said, a good balance between drama and humor.
Yeah.
And the joke about Morn and stuff. Yeah, everything was great. As you said, no, except for the scene when the security team comes back with Mulebok's friends.
Yeah.
Where they fight. But again, it's a fight scene. It's not a series where they fight every episode. So that was okay. The character, Mulebok's character, I was sold at the first minute I saw him. I knew I was going to like him. The way he told the story of how he, as he said, he tamed the land. It was hilarious. A great episode. As you said, maybe not a top five, but Not too far. It's one of those memorable episodes that I can watch and rewatch with pleasure. So, yeah, I was glad that we reviewed that tonight.
Yeah, no, it was good.
Right. Do we have trivia for this episode, Dave?
I have only one piece left, and all it does is reference the fact that this is the second time in DS9 when the Bajoran name order is mentioned.
Yes.
The fact that the on Bajor, your family name is given first, and then your given name, the name you're known by, your first name, is given second.
Yes. That was mentioned in Next Gen prior to that, with the arrival of Ensign Rolaren.
Okay. I've not met Ensign Ro.
No. Was it before or after the beginning of DS9? I don't remember that, but yes. So, yeah, they give their family name first and then their given name.
Because I'll be honest, that caught me out in Emissary when we first met mm-hmm. most of the characters, when I realized that actually Kira was her family name rather than her the name, because I think it's possible that Mubarak is the only person I think who was referred to her by the name Neris.
Possibly, yes.
Even in an informal setting.
Mm-hmm. That's possible.
Mm.
That is possible. So if we don't have anything to add to the review, we shall finish said review of Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 1 episode, I don't remember, Progress. Thanks to all of you for listening to our show. You can help us spread the love for this podcast by trading 100 gross of USB sticks with our show on it for 4,700 paint buckets that you can use to write the name of the show on the surface of the moon, which you can then sell as an NFT, or if you think that the future of this crypto nonsense is not a good opportunity for profit, you can simply share the address of our website on social media.
For free.
For free.
And you can find our website at tlgreyhot.org. And on there, you'll find all the show notes for all of the episodes we have ever done, all the reviews we have ever done, and you can leave a comment at the bottom of every one of our posts.
Except the first episode 0.
Shh.
We don't speak of the first episode 0. If you are still living in a pre-COVID time, you can send us an email at feedback@tlgreyhot.org. We read everything we receive. And if you don't want to be associated with the show, which is absolutely understandable, just make sure that you tell us that and we won't read your name on the podcast.
And if you're a little bit more modern, then we are on Twitter and Facebook. Our username on both of those is TEGHpodcast. We are also on Telegram at t.me/TEGHpodcast. And we are streaming the recording of these episodes, like we are doing right now, on Twitch at twitch.tv/... Go on, guess. Have a guess. Yeah. TEGHpodcast. And thank you, as always.
Amazing.
I know. Yeah. And thank you, as always, to Lainey, our communications officer, for looking after those for us. Most grateful.
Yes, and also kicking the boats or spam in the Twitch chat where they want to... Well, actually, they asked us if we wanted to become famous, and I kind of like to become famous, but
it's a
not
nice
by
idea.
Paying followers. Yeah, it's a nice idea. Well, I guess we're already famous, you know, amongst our...
ourselves.
And amongst ourselves, yes. True. Thanks to Memory Alpha. As always, we have based our review of this week's episode on their work, and this is released under a Creative Commons by attribution, non-commercial license.
And the rest of this show is released under a Creative Commons by attribution, share alike license. There may or may not be a page on our website that explains what that means, but if you just search for it on Google or whichever search engine you tend to use, it'll be on there somewhere.
The page is there. If it's not there when you're looking at the page at the website, it's because it's a quantic page, and also it has a weird relationship with the lawnmower, time traveling lawnmower, things like that. So it's not always there.
That I might just be looking at the wrong times then.
Yes.
Simples.
That's it. Yes. This podcast is part of the Otherside Podcast Network. Check out our website at otherside.network for our wonderful shows and hosts.
Indeed. Our next episode will be our review of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Season 1, Episode 16, If Wishes Were Horses.
And that brings us to the end of this week's episode. Thank you, Dave, for joining once again.
Absolutely. You know how much I love doing this.
Yeah,
so it is my pleasure, literally.
It is our geeky, Star Trek-y pleasure of the week, and I look forward every week to this recording.
And of course, thank you for inviting me back, you know.
No problem. I couldn't do that without you.
Oh, bless you.
We will be back next week with a whole lot more Star Trek. In the meantime, make sure you save that COVID certificate in a safe place. But I already said that last week and I haven't changed the sign off text. So take care of yourself. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
See ya.
While Dax mentions that Morn had asked her out early, I told you it was going to be a fun show.
You have a fly on your pop screen. It's been bugging me for ages. No pun intended.
You've been listening to a member of the Otherside Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at otherside.network.